Simon and Chatter. Emily and Horatio were with Anne, all three ladies whispering by the small fire in the hearth. He could hear the logs pop and snap. While the spring was relatively warm, today had been cooler than most. "What has Ash done to deserve your displeasure?" Jonathan asked, the newest to their league, his blonde hair and green eyes, not to mention the familial resemblance to his older brother Godric, made him nothing short of a young Adonis. He was more reserved when out among the ton at social gatherings than the other members of the league. Having lived most of his life as a servant, he was still unsure of himself when it came to the upper class and trying to act as one of their equals. He hadn't been aware that he was Godric's half-brother until last September. "The scoundrel abandoned me at Anne's house. I had no carriage, no servants, no way to get home." Cedric reached out in Ashton's direction. "Let me find your face so I can draw your cork until you bleed." Ashton chuckled. His chair creaked, as he no doubt wanted to avoid Cedric's grasp. "Jonathan, catch him and hold him still, so I can get a decent blow to his jaw," Cedric commanded. But Jonathan merely laughed. "I wouldn't dare get in the way of your fists. You might miss him and hit me." "So, villain, why did you leave me?" Cedric asked Ashton more seriously. "Because I thought you and Anne should have some time alone. I hadn't intended to leave you alone at her house, but when I went down to check on our coach, a runner delivered me a note from one of my business contacts. I assumed Anne would be able to see you home and to Godric's tonight without issue. Was I right?"
"Of course you were. That's what I dislike about you. You are always right. But come now, what was this business matter that sent you flying from Anne's home with such urgency?"
Ashton's voice darkened.
"I've been running into stone walls with my usual merchants who buy my shipping services. Today, I found out the source of those walls."
"Was it a business competitor?" Jonathan speculated.
"It is always a business competitor with Ashton," Lucien cut in as he, Godric and Charles joined them in the evening room and drew up chairs around the lacquered card table. "Though normally you are not this affected by the tactics of your competitors," Godric noted thoughtfully.
"Yes, well, that's because up till now all of my competitors have been men. This latest adversary happens to be a lady," Ashton declared with a mix of irritation and exasperation.
"A woman? I should have known."
Charles snickered like a schoolboy who'd pulled the best prank he'd ever conceived.
"Better not be another banker's daughter. You're becoming too predictable, old man."
"Careful, pup."
Ashton's sharp tone drew the attention of the three ladies, who turned their heads in the direction of the rogues. In response, the rogues dropped their heads and drew in closer to better shield their conversation from the women.
"Who is this most aggravating lady?" Lucien asked.
"Do I know her? Have I bedded her?"
"I don't believe you have, Lucien, which leaves a very short list of possibilities, I know."
Ashton's tone was heavy with wry amusement.
"It is Lady Rosalind Melbourne, the widow of the late Lord Melbourne, a distant cousin to the Prime Minister."
"Rosalind Melbourne.
I know that name from somewhere," Godric pondered, and then his face lit up. "Rosalind is the sister to those three Scots I tangled with in Edinburgh some years ago." He laughed heartily and smacked the table.
"What a row that was. Broke half the furniture in that alehouse, as I recall." "Those brutes are Lady Melbourne's brothers."
Charles's eyes went wide in astonishment.
"One of them actually landed a blow on me, which I've not let happen since."
Cedric cut in.
"Hold on. What Scotsman? I've never heard of this."
Jonathan smacked his knee and chuckled.
"That's probably because they beat my brother to a pulp, and their tempers make him look like a bloody angel. What were their names again, Godric?"
Jonathan shot a devious grin at his brother.
"Brock, Brody, and Aidan Kincaid. Barbarians, the lot of them. I heard their father passed away last year, left them a castle somewhere up in the Highlands."
"And what of Rosalind? Is she a barbarian like her brothers?"
As always, Lucien focused on the woman in the story. He was a reformed rake, but still a rake.
"Lady Melbourne is Refined, to a degree. But she's also ruthless, Ashton said. She's taking business from me, and I don't care for it. Finally, there is someone out there to make Ashton angry. I thought nothing ever affected you, Cedric said. Is she fair? Jonathan asked. Unfortunately, yes, Ashton admitted. But she doesn't seem to use it to her advantage, not that I have seen. Then seduce the woman. She's a widow, isn't she? Should be easy, Lucien suggested. Suddenly something struck Lucien in the back of the head and glanced off Cedric. Who threw that pillow? Lucien demanded, turning around. Horatia, behave yourself. Why should I, when you clearly aren't? Came her reply down by the fireplace. It was clear she'd been eavesdropping on the entire conversation. What was that for? Godric asked. Lucien harrumphed before turning back to his friends. Horatia tends to chuck pillows at me when she's angry. I figure it could be worse. She could throw vases. So I keep the house well stocked with all sorts of soft projectiles to appease her vigilante needs to strike at me at will.
You deserve it, Lucien,
Horatia said over loudly.
Suggesting seduction like that. How awful.
I'm sure I do, darling, Lucien called back over his shoulder. Another pillow smacked soundly into Jonathan.
Why the devil did you duck, Lucien?
Jonathan muttered. You're the cad, not I. I'm not up to taking a beating from your wife. You know, Cedric, I do believe I like your other sister better. At least she doesn't throw things whenever she fancies.
Ha! Jonathan, you've never seen Audrey on days when she can't find the right bonnet, said Cedric. Good God! The little sprite can tear down an entire house trying to find what she's looking for.
The memory brought a smile to his lips. He missed her terribly. Hopefully she and Lucien's mother would return from their trip to the continent soon. Jonathan tossed the pillow over his shoulder, and it landed on the snoozing foxhound Penelope. The dog let out a yip of surprise, then sniffed the pillow with suspicion. Cedric cleared his throat.
Speaking of Audrey, I thought I should have a word with you, Jonathan. I promised her that I would have a husband waiting for her when she returned from her European tour.
You mean she wants to marry me? Jonathan's voice rose up in the way a man's voice only could when threatened with marriage.
She mentioned an interest in you. You do not have to accept, and I intend to have other prospects ready as well. I only want you to consider it, if you know you could be a good husband to her.
I am flattered, of course, Jonathan managed. But I shall have to think on it.
No rush. She won't be back until June.
Cedric wished he could have seen Jonathan's face. He could almost picture the young man's terror. Jonathan was as much of a rogue as his brother, but he did not have the same desire to pursue ladies of quality, at least not with any sense of permanence in mind.
Cedric, permit me a question,
Godric asked in a low tone to prevent being overheard by the ladies.
Ask away, old boy.
Is Anne aware that you marked her during your private dinner this evening?
Cedric's face flushed. Dear God, he hadn't thought that everyone would see his rough love bites. He no longer thought much about what was visible and what wasn't.
Are they that noticeable? Cedric asked.
It appears that either she fell on her fork or you had a nice couple of nibbles on her neck. Lucien's tone dripped with devious amusement.
Your lack of sight is making you a sloppy seducer, Cedric.
I've never known you to leave a woman so clearly tumbled.
I didn't tumble her.
At least, not fully, he silently amended.
So she did fall on her fork, then? Lucien supplied.
Cedric groaned, slapping his palm over his forehead in resignation.
If she doesn't notice the marks, then I'm sure Emily and Horatia won't mention it.
Godric attempted to reassure him.
Well, probably.
Ashton returned to a safer topic.
So, things are going well between you?
Cedric hesitated, too ashamed to admit how off balance he felt around his future wife. Seduction had never been a problem before. Now, though, he questioned his every move and wondered if he was moving things too fast or not fast enough. I am not sure if marriage is what she wants. I desire it, as foolish as that sounds. But she tries to keep her distance, as though she fears I'll wound her.
Cedric let out his breath in a long sigh.
I cannot see how. I'm only capable of hurting myself these days.
She may fear a wound of the heart, rather than that of the body, Godric suggested. Emily fought me off in part, because she believed that if she fell in love, I would eventually cease to want her, and would move on to the next challenge. With any other woman I might have, but not Emily.
A wound of the heart? Cedric repeated curiously. I suppose that would explain her guarded exterior. Is there no way I can convince her that I would not throw her over for another woman? I mean, I've had my fun as a rake, but my life has changed, and marriage is a serious business. I would not enter into that particular contract so lightly, with just anyone.
We know that, Cedric, but Anne does not. You must find a way to prove yourself.
With women, actions speak loudest, Ashton advised.
A thousand delightful promises won't matter against one that she wished you'd kept and failed to. Do not assure her with words. Show her that she is yours, and you are hers, and that no one shall come between you.
Cedric rested his hands on the lacquered table, feeling the cool surface beneath his fingers. How on earth am I supposed to do that?
That is what you will have to figure out for yourself.
You know, Ashton, one of these days a woman will so completely tie you up in emotional and physical knots that you'll be begging for my advice, and I will gloatingly tell you to figure it out for yourself, Cedric said with a dark chuckle.
Don't be silly. Ashton is far too composed and rational to fall prey to feminine wiles, Lucien teased.
Ashton cleared his throat uncomfortably.
Of course, no woman will ever get the upper hand with me.
Cedric chuckled.
Now you've doomed yourself.
Anne was listening to Emily and Horatia share various wedding stories to amuse her. Godric was so nervous, he told me he ruined 3 neckcloths on the way to the church. His valet almost wept.
Emily shot a glance in her husband's direction and blushed when she saw him gazing back. Godric's face was a picture of love and devotion, and it warmed her deep inside to see it.
Lucien had to endure an hour-long lecture from his mother before she would even let him go into the church. Apparently, she had wanted her firstborn child's marriage to be normal. Instead, he was marrying me within a week of nearly dying from a duel. She was most upset she couldn't have a normal wedding ceremony. When Lucien finally got inside, Charles told me that Lucien was ready to fall on his knees and beg my eternal forgiveness. He didn't need it, of course. But I did so love to tease him about it after the wedding.
Horatia clutched a pillow in her lap, an extra weapon to throw should Lucien voice his rakish advice too loudly again. Someone had to keep the reformed man in line.
Have either of you met this Rosalind Melbourne? Emily asked.
Horatia shook her head, but Anne nodded.
She is Lord Melbourne's widow. I hear she is quite the businesswoman, but she tends to avoid most social events. She is Scottish, and doesn't always feel welcome in London circles, I think. Which is a pity. She is a lovely woman, and quite friendly.
Emily straightened in her seat.
You have met her personally, Anne. Could you arrange for me to meet her?
I suppose.
Why the sudden interest in Lady Melbourne?
Emily smiled.
I've never seen Ashton's feathers ruffled before, and a woman capable of doing that to a man like him intrigues me.
Ashton certainly needs his feathers ruffled.
I could certainly agree with that. Even when he was wounded from that gunshot, he maintained a disturbing level of civility while your husband tried to stem the flow of his blood. Lord Lennox's self-control is unnatural. So, will you introduce me to this Lady Melbourne?
Emily was almost vibrating with energy.
Of course. I believe she likes to attend the opera. We could arrange for all of us to go, and I will introduce you if she is there.
Oh, I do love the opera.
Horatia smiled, her warm eyes so much like her brother's, lit with joy at the prospect of an evening of musical delight.
Lady Rochester, Anne began.
Anne, please call me Horatia. We are to be sisters soon. I want no titles to stand between us.
Anne shyly corrected herself.
Horatia.
As an only child, she'd never known the joy of having siblings, to be openly claimed by Cedric's family, now that her father was gone, strangely made her want to weep.
Does your brother enjoy the opera as well?
Anne knew so little of Cedric. Truly knew him, that is. She knew his mannerisms, his way of charming those around him, and what was officially recorded about him. She'd made it the purpose of her first season out to know him. But as a man, he was still a mystery. What colour did he favour? What was his favourite dinner dish? Did he enjoy the opera? There was much that she wished to know, and her eagerness for this surprised her.
Cedric isn't much interested in the arts, but opera seems to be the one exception. He rents a box in Covent Garden,
Horatia said.
He hasn't gone since.
Her voice trailed off. There was no need to finish her sentence.
But I think he should go. Opera is more about music than the scenes and actors.
That is true, Emily agreed.
It is settled, then. We must convince Cedric to attend the opera. You must ask him, Anne.
Me? Why me?
He might feel flattered that you wish to be seen with him in public.
I'm marrying him. There is nothing more public than that,
Anne argued.
Yes, but a night at Covent Garden with him will make him believe you aren't ashamed of him.
I'm not ashamed.
We know that. But men can be such fickle and sensitive creatures, despite their bravado.
Show him how you feel, Emily encouraged. Words have little meaning to men. They don't want verbal reassurances. They want kisses in the rain, long tight embraces, and quiet afternoons shared together.
Horatia smiled knowingly at her. Emily's right, Anne. Cedric feels that he's a burden to everyone. But if you can entice him to take you to the opera, he will feel wanted, desired.
Even as Horatia said it, Anne's mind flashed back to the library, where Cedric believed she did not want him. Could his sense of self-worth and desirability be that damaged? She'd half believed he meant only to play her right into his arms. But she now knew the sad truth. He really did believe himself undesirable, that no woman would have him. The question that Anne faced was whether she could entice him into her arms long enough to reinforce his self-worth, while not throwing her own heart into the mix. To prove he was desirable would expose her to the greatest heartbreak she would ever know. Was she strong enough to withstand such a tearing of that part of her she'd protected all these years? The last person she'd dared to love had died a week ago. Anne wished that she wasn't so afraid of love, but it was terrifying. To love someone so completely meant you gave them the key to your soul, and with that they held the greatest power over you. Her father had been the only person she'd dared to trust with that key. He hadn't disappointed her in that, but his death had been all the more painful because of her love for him.
Go on, Anne. Ask him,
Emily encouraged. Anne looked over her shoulder to catch a glimpse of Cedric at the card table. Surrounded by his friends, he looked healthier, happier, as though their good spirits had revived him somewhat. Anne suddenly wished she could do that for him, make him smile, and relax enough to just be himself and be happy. Anne rose and started toward the men still deep in conversation. The soft rumble of their voices was like summer thunder after a light storm. It was a peaceful sound, the low murmurs, but her presence now halted it.
"Lord Sheridan,"
she began, her voice almost cracking with tension. She tried to ignore the weight of the 5 masculine stares. Cedric was directly in front of her, his back mere inches away, and the sudden proximity of him brought flashes of their passionate moment in the library. He turned his head toward her. "What is it, Anne?" His tone was not irritated like she expected, but patient. Without thinking, she laid a hand on his shoulder, feeling the steel of the muscles beneath her palm.
"Your sister said you rent a box at Covent Garden."
Cedric's brows rose in surprise.
"I do."
"Would it be possible?
I should like to see the opera that is playing tomorrow night.
You wish to have me loan the box to you?
There was a deadness in his tone built from his assumption that she would attend the opera without him.
No, no, I wish for you to escort me.
She squeezed his shoulder a little, hoping it would encourage him.
You do?
Of course.
Dinner too?
Cedric suggested hopefully.
That would be lovely,
she answered in all sincerity, and was rewarded with Cedric's smile. He covered her hand with his.
Then consider it done, my dear.
He returned her squeeze, and then dropped his hand back to the table.
You realize Emily and Horatia will wish to go to the opera too,
Godric groaned.
We ought to make a night of it, all of us,
Charles suggested, with a respectful glance in Anne's direction. Anne thought she saw him nod to her in approval.
Would that bother you? Cedric asked Anne quietly, as his friends broke out into conversation again regarding this new development.
I had thought some time alone with you to be my goal, but this is nice too.
Anne's fingers brushed over his shoulder as she spoke. She was growing fonder of the moments they had alone, but being included among the League and their families was wonderful as well. However, it was better to be around them in this instance, because they couldn't be alone, and he couldn't woo her with his kisses. She was succumbing to his patient and gentle seductions, for better or worse.
Don't worry, Anne. Even in a crowd, I can still find ways to be alone with you.
And though she suspected he meant to sound rakish, the words and his tone were instead boyishly charming.
Thank you.
She bent to whisper in his ear, and to her own surprise found herself brushing her lips on his cheek in the lightest of kisses. It was highly improper to kiss him in front of others, but it was becoming easier to act foolishly when Cedric was around. Cupping her cheek with his warm, strong palm, Cedric caressed her bottom lip with the pad of his thumb before he dropped his hand again. It seemed he was afraid to touch her for too long.
You should return to the ladies. I wouldn't wish to bore you with our talk of business.
Anne harrumphed as ladylike as possible.
I highly doubt you were discussing business, and I'll have you know I'm the one who spent the last 2 years managing my father's investments through his solicitor.
Hear, hear, Miss Chesley. Ashton chuckled and raised his glass of brandy to her.
Why, you little. Cedric caught his bride-to-be about the waist and pulled her onto his lap. Anne gave an outraged little squawk, but it was a playful one.
Oh, dear, you'd best release her, Cedric, Lucien warned with a half-laugh. Horatia looks ready to hurl another pillow.
Very well, Cedric let Anne fight her way out of his embrace, but not without swatting her backside as she left. She glared at him over her shoulder, only to remember he couldn't see.
Things between you and Anne are better than I expected, Godric said in obvious relief.
I think she's warming up to me, Cedric boasted.
Lucien sniggered. I'm not so sure. I think your friendly pat just now set you back a week in your wooing.
There's always the carriage ride home, I suppose. Cedric sighed dramatically, to which his friends laughed.
Are we really all going to the opera?
Jonathan asked. There was a hopefulness in his tone that made Cedric's heart tighten. Having only recently discovered he was a legitimate brother to a duke, and not a servant as he'd been raised, meant he still held a certain caution that hadn't been present before. Jonathan had not been ill-treated, but he had not lived the lavish life Godric had either. Events they took for granted he still looked upon as grand adventures.
Of course we are, Godric assured him. Which opera are we seeing anyway?
Charles asked. He had never been one for theatre, but he wouldn't miss out on a group event that promised to be a night of hilarity at the expense of his married friends.
I believe the current opera is Gioacchino Rossini's latest work, Mathilde de Chabron, Ashton said.
Lucien quirked a brow at the usually business-minded baron.
I didn't know you kept abreast of the latest operas. We all have our little indulgences.
Of course. But most of us satisfy that in the beds of lovely women. Wives, Lucien corrected when Cedric coughed a warning.
You are lucky that I already shot you for that,
Cedric retorted. Thank you for that polite reminder. Dueling with Lucien over Horatia's honor had been one of the darkest days the League had ever seen. But Cedric had a bad feeling. More was still on the horizon. Chapter 10. The following evening, Anne took Cedric's offered arm and allowed him to escort her through the throng of people gathered in the foyer of Covent Garden's Royal Opera House. The strong scents of unwashed bodies and groups of low-necklined Cyprian ladies clinging to the men were an unwelcome sight. But Covent Garden was a blend of middle and upper classes that couldn't be avoided. God's teeth! Cedric muttered as a buxom woman fell against him, laughing raucously. He shoved her to the side with his lion's head cane. You are lucky, my lord, that you cannot see. The sight is most unpleasant, Anne confided to her escort. Cedric responded with a grunt of agreement and let her lead him in the direction of the stairs that would take them to his box. A tall, fair-haired man blocked their path to the stairs. She froze, like a rabbit caught in a snare. She'd never forget that man, or his pale eyes. The very sight of him chilled her blood.
Crispin Andrews.
He was the last man on earth she wanted to see. Her stomach churned, and she tried to remember to breathe.
Not here. Not now.
The man's gaze swept over the crowd, and stilled when it settled on Anne. What is it, Anne? Cedric asked, when she dug her nails into his arm. Before she could reply, Crispin was upon them. Miss Chesley, how good it is to see you. I was sorry to hear about your father. You have my condolences, of course. Those cold eyes studied her from tip to toe with such a familiarity that she thought she might toss up her accounts right there in front of everyone. He waited for her to say something, to be polite and respond. What she wanted to do was strike out at him, render his beautiful face with the mark of the devil to warn women away from him. But she couldn't. She summoned that icy veneer she'd built the last 2 years. It had never been about keeping people like Cedric out, but about protecting herself from this one man. Anne composed her face in a mask of politeness.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews. Have you met Lord Sheridan?
Crispin shifted his gaze to Cedric, a smirk lifting the corner of what some ladies believed was a handsome mouth. Anne knew only too well what that mouth was capable of, and it wasn't good.
I believe our paths have crossed on occasion. It has been a few years, though. Last time was at a ball, I believe.
You were in the company of a most attractive widow, Crispin replied. His casual tone was in stark contrast to the predatory sweep of his eyes over Anne's body once again. That knowing gaze of his was a blatant reminder that he remembered what had transpired between them. To him, it had been enjoyable. To her, it had been a nightmare.
I must say, it is a surprise to see you out and about, Miss Chesley. I thought, given the depth of your feelings toward your father, you would wish to honour his memory for the full length of the mourning period.
Anne flinched at the implication, her grip on her reticule hard enough that she thought she might tear the fabric. Cedric gallantly rescued her.
I'm afraid that is my fault. You see, I all but demanded my fiancée accompany me to the opera. She wished to remain home in seclusion, but you know of my reputation. I hold little love for societal obligations, such as mourning.
Fiancée? Why? Miss Chesley, I had no idea you would be seeking a husband after...
Oh, but I'm sorry. I shouldn't speak so frankly of such matters.
The incredulity in Crispin's voice cut Anne to the core. It was obvious he hadn't thought her capable of securing such a man for matrimony, not after what he'd done to her. Crispin raised an eyebrow at Anne, as though he thought her situation was amusing. Her hatred for this vile creature continued to grow. We are to be wed this Saturday, Cedric continued, oblivious to the silent war between Crispin and Anne.
Are you? How blessed you must feel, Lord Sheridan, to have the wealth of Anne's spirit under your command.
Crispin spoke in Cedric's direction, but his eyes were still locked on Anne's face.
I haven't seen the announcement in the papers. When did you post the banns?
We didn't. We are marrying under a special license. Cedric's tone became frigid, heightened by his aggressive lean forward. Blind as he was, he still seemed to sense the threat that Crispin presented, and was ready to protect her. The anger and hatred she felt for Crispin lessened in the wake of Cedric's protectiveness over her. Cedric was inching toward Crispin, his head at a slight angle, as though carefully listening, or perhaps hunting him. Crispin paused, shooting Anne a wicked smile before continuing. "Then you have my congratulations on the upcoming nuptials. Should I be offering congratulations on anything else, Miss Chesley?" Before Crispin could utter another word, Cedric lunged, slamming the aristocrat up against the gilded wall, his cane pressed across Crispin's throat like a blade.
"Cedric, let him go,"
Anne begged, tugging on his shoulders. Crispin's face began to turn purple.
"Have a care, sir. I may not be bothered by such slanderous tones, but that is my future wife you have insulted."
Cedric finished with a primal growl. Anne, desperate to prevent Cedric from harming Crispin and causing more trouble, wrapped her arms around Cedric and pulled. Cedric released the man, dropping him like a sack of flour. He spun on Anne, gripping her wrist, then swiped his cane like a scythe along the carpets, shooing people out of his way as she led him up the stairs and into his opera box. Despite his haste and anger, he didn't so much as stumble the entire way. The door banged shut hard enough that the frame rattled. The curtains around the box's edge were not yet open, which meant Anne and Cedric had stepped into darkness. He pushed her against the wall with the warmth of the velvet curtains on her left side and Cedric's body in front of her. His cane clattered to the floor and his hands cupped her face, fingers tunneling into her hair. Rather than kiss her, as she expected, he held her to him, resting his chin on the top of her head. His breathing was ragged and his distant brown eyes clouded with emotional storms.
"Calm me down, Anne. Tell me there is nothing between you and Andrews. He made it sound as though you and he were more than acquainted."
His plea was hoarse with desperation.
"He means less than nothing to me. He is a ruthless cad, and if I never lay eyes on him again, it would be too soon."
Anne placed her hands around his wrists, rubbing her fingers back and forth over his skin. She hadn't meant to speak so truthfully. It had just slipped out. Her barrier seemed to crumble when it came to Cedric.
"I wanted to kill him. I could not see, of course, but something about his tone. I wanted to."
Cedric's dark confession would have shocked her, but she knew Crispin and despised him. She placed her fingertips against Cedric's lips, letting him know he didn't need to say another word.
"We're here now, you and me, together. Let's sit down and enjoy the rest of the evening."
Cedric's hands on her face tightened, as though he feared she would vanish. He loosened his grasp and bent to retrieve his cane. Anne helped him to his seat, then pushed the curtains out of the way. An uncomfortable silence lingered in the air.
"I hope I did not embarrass you down there," he said, after a long moment, his face turned away from her.
"You didn't. Mr. Andrews is the last man on earth I would ever be concerned about. Your instincts were correct. He was not civil tonight, and therefore your reaction did not have to be either."
Anne did not miss his sigh of relief. She wished she could tell Cedric how she really felt, how seeing him nearly strangle Crispin over her honour had made her eyes sting with tears, and her heart tighten with affection. She didn't want Cedric to hurt anyone, but it had made her feel a little better, seeing the man who'd caused her so many sleepless nights suffer. Anne opened her mouth, wanting to say more, but as she looked out on the gallery below, she caught sight of someone she recognized.
"Oh, there is Lord Lonsdale."
Anne watched the golden-haired earl chase a pretty Cyprian in a scarlet gown through a row of empty seats. The woman squealed as she fled from the lusty earl's pursuit, in full sight of the growing audience.
"Do I even wish to know what Charles is up to?"
Cedric's voice was more relaxed and a little bemused. "He seems to be pursuing a lady about the gallery, and there they go, behind the green baize curtains of the stage." Anne found herself giggling as Charles and his latest lady love were promptly shoved back off the stage and into the rowdy masses milling about in the bottom part of the theatre. Rather than run off, he simply put the woman on his lap and started to kiss her. Good heavens! The man was incorrigible. She smiled, unable to contain how happy she was in that moment. To sit with Cedric and discuss his friends from a place of intimacy, rather than as the outsider she'd always been. This might work between us after all. Cedric listened to the crowds gathering in the theatre, the aroma of beer, bodies and oranges permeating his senses. He could picture the way the candles fringed the stage's edge, like fairy lights, dancing attendants upon the performers who would fill the stage. People would still talk, even as the candles and lamps in the gallery were snuffed out, and the orchestra stirred to life. Cedric remembered what a sensual joy it was to share the experience in a beautiful woman's company. "Anne," he whispered, as he held his left hand palm up. He expected her to ask him what he wanted, but she never said a word. The warm weight of her hand, fine-boned but strong as her fingers curled around his, made Cedric's heartbeat jolt into a quick canter. Was he pathetic for enjoying this simple touch, this strangely peaceful moment? In the past he had taken women to his opera box, seduced and pleasured them in the midst of mighty arias. Why did those moments seem less erotic now than the mere weight of Anne's palm in the darkness? Cedric savoured the anticipation, the intake of breath before the first note sounded, and the opera began. Cedric let his eyes close, embracing the grey abyss as the music washed over him. He was fairly good with Italian, but it was a trickier thing to listen to it when being sung in an opera. He tried to imagine the actors, tried to envision the story. Ashton had read to him the summary of the plot earlier that day, so he could be prepared for this evening. There was a cold, woman-hating man, Corradino, who by virtue of a pact with the father of the young and beautiful Mathilde, was in charge of Mathilde's fate. Cedric listened to the deep, rich voice of Corradino as he swore to marry Mathilde off, having not yet seen her beauty for himself. As a man who'd sworn himself free of the influence of women, Corradino saw the glorious beauty of a raging Mathilde as she quarrelled with Corradino's formerly betrothed, a jealous countess. Anne was his Mathilde, the stubborn, quarrelsome woman who inflamed him with desire at first sight. She did not know this, and did not have any idea how much he had wanted her when she had been in the delicate blush of her coming out 2 years ago. But he did not bed innocence, because at the time he could not bear to bed a woman who might fall in love with him. It always happened that way. As he roared his release and came inside an innocent woman, she would purr and sigh and gaze at him with love-stricken eyes, expecting that a proposal was but a heartbeat away. But Anne, God, how he'd wanted her that first night he'd met her. His desire had been so dangerous that he'd sought out a lovely young widow he knew and lured her into an alcove off the main dancing room at Almack's to ease his aching body. He'd taken the willing widow fast and hard, a grinding of hips and rough play against a wall. Even afterward, he'd only found a momentary respite from his desire for Anne. His eyes sought her out in the dancing hall, but he dared not speak to her. Dared not acknowledge what his body wanted from hers. "I wanted you then. Now I want you more than ever," he thought, not chancing a pointless blind gaze in her direction. He had kept away from her, but the acquisition of the Arabians had changed things. It gave him a reason to pursue her, and so he had. But how cold she'd been, mocking smiles and a body that did not respond to his heated looks or suggestive words. He'd all but given up, resigned to a life without this woman who fascinated him like no other. And then she'd come to him, begged him to rescue her. He no longer cared that she was in need of his name, not his heart. He would take Anne any way he could have her. even if he could only hold her hand right now, just like this. The audience broke into applause, and the emerald curtains dropped down, covering the stage from view.
"That was wonderful," Anne admitted.
"I found the story to be most captivating," Cedric replied.
"Do you know it?"
She hadn't thought he'd studied operas, only attended them. "I had Ashton read me the summary, so I might have something to picture in my mind. Is Matilda as beautiful to Corradina as she sounds?" Cedric asked, his lips lifting into the ghost of a smile.
"Yes, she is very beautiful. I believe Corradino's reaction to her is what is so enchanting. He sees only her, wants only her. It would be something to be desired like that."
Anne ended with a sigh and looked toward the stage, bereft of the lively actors. Cedric lifted her hand and brushed his lips on her open palm, making her shiver. She turned back to him, entranced by the sight of his mouth exploring her hand. He licked the center of her palm, and the spike of his tongue sparked the place between her thighs to life, awaiting something she kept refusing herself. But come Saturday, she knew that she could not keep Cedric barred from her bedchamber, and at that moment she didn't want to keep him out.
"Drop the box curtains, Anne. Let me kiss you senseless. I need to taste the sweet innocence of your mouth and feel the weight of your body in my arms."
Anne was halfway ready to let him, but the door to their box swung open. A shaft of light broke through and lit up Cedric's irritated face.
"Emily!"
Anne pulled her hand free of Cedric's mouth as Emily and Godric came in.
"I hope we are not intruding," Godric apologized as he registered the disapproving scowl on Cedric's face.
"Not at all, Your Grace," Anne assured Godric.
"You bloody well are,"
Cedric grumbled, though only Anne heard him.
"Splendid. Have you both enjoyed the show?"
Emily asked, alight with her natural mischief.
"Yes, Lord Sheridan and I were just talking about the story," Anne said.
"And about to make our own," Cedric said, again too soft for the others to hear.
Her smile widened as she reflected on the moment she and Cedric had shared before they'd been interrupted. She'd felt like Matilde, if only for a few seconds.
"Now, Anne, wasn't there someone you saw earlier that you said, I should like to meet?"
Emily's tone dropped as she spoke. Anne leapt up. Of course, the reason she'd come to the opera tonight was to introduce Anne to Lady Rosalind Melbourne.
"I'd quite forgotten," Anne replied, and turned to Cedric. "Emily and I shall only be a moment. We must go and speak with someone."
"Do you wish for me to accompany you?"
Anne felt her chest clench at the hope in his voice. If it wasn't for Emily's need to scheme and spy, Anne would have insisted Cedric come along.
"Stay and keep Godric company," Emily jumped in. "I promise to return your lady to you before you know it, Cedric."
While Cedric still looked disappointed, he seemed less hurt. Emily had that effect on people.
"I will be back soon,"
Anne promised, before she let Emily steer her out into the hallway behind the boxes. As they descended the stairs, there was no evidence of the struggle between Cedric and Crispin to be seen. Anne wondered vaguely where Crispin had gone, hopefully far, far away. Anne and Emily did not meander down the hall twittering about the latest gossip, as women were wont to do at the opera. Rather, Emily strode through the throngs of people with an expectant gleam in her eyes, a tracker on the prowl.
"Let me know the moment you spot Lady Melbourne,"
Emily commanded. Anne looked from one end of the theatre to the other and spotted their quarry, but Lady Melbourne wasn't alone.
"Oh dear. Well, I have found her, but I do believe she would rather not be disturbed. Whatever do you mean?"
Emily scanned the crowd and then realized what she had meant. She covered her mouth with her hands.
"Is that her? The woman whom Ashton is escorting into that dark alcove?"
"Yes." Anne didn't know whether she ought to leave the lady and lord alone, or whether to run to Lady Melbourne's rescue. Lord Lennox had a particularly punishing expression on his face. Anne was not sure she could properly assess his intentions. Could a man be both angered and intrigued by a woman at the same time? Oh, dear, I suppose I shan't have the fortune of meeting her this evening. I must confess, I've never seen Ashton look so... Emily failed to supply a word and waved a hand in the air.
Confused?
Anne offered.
Befuddled and furious. Do you think she needs us to interfere?
Anne watched the couple as they disappeared from sight.
You don't think he might physically harm her, do you?
Emily giggled.
Ashton? Lord, no. He would never.
At least, not physically, she amended thoughtfully. Her business might be in danger, though. We ought to warn her of that. But not tonight.
One can't help but wonder what is going on between them,
Anne mused, long after she could no longer see any evidence of Lady Melbourne or Lord Lennox in the theatre. What could the mysterious Baron be up to? Ashton's patience was on a razor's edge. With one hand on Lady Rosalind Melbourne's arm, he'd seized the opportunity to tow her into the seclusion of a nearby alcove. He feared what he might do now that he had her here. Every muscle was tense, every sense heightened with excitement and, to be honest, arousal. It made no sense. He was furious with the lady. Anger and arousal had never gone hand in hand with him before. So why did he want to push this particular woman up against a wall and ravish her until she couldn't remember her name? "I must speak with you, madam," he said, his tone dark and full of warning. Rosalind struggled against his grip, and to his surprise Ashton found her difficult to hold down. With a rebellious toss of her head, her raven-hued locks flew loose over one shoulder. That didn't help with the problem of his rising desire. This Scottish hellion needed a good bedding to tame that wildness. He wanted it to be his bed she fell into.
Damnation! Gain control, Lennox. This is business. Now is not the time to let passion rule you.
We have nothing to say to each other. Now release me.
Rosalind refused to look at him. She kept her pointed chin aimed away from him. Her resistance was charming. Charming? What the bloody hell was he thinking? He never liked it when people refused to do as he asked. He did not take no as an acceptable response. In the world of shipping, he was as relentless as he was calculating and precise, something his competitors respected, even if they loathed him for it. My dear, on that count you are mistaken. We have much to discuss. Ashton's free hand caught her chin and forced her to face him. She blinked in surprise, her eyes luminous in the shadows.
You've been a naughty girl.
The rich timbre of his voice caused her to pale. Frightened a little, perhaps. Good. Why did the idea of catching her like this, of holding her captive, heat his blood? Was this how Godric had felt when dominating his darling Emily? Was that why his friend half lost his mind wherever Emily was concerned?
I cannot be feeling that. Certainly not for this woman.
The thought, chilling as it was, couldn't penetrate his predatory urge to settle the matter between them.
I don't know what you mean.
The hesitancy in her tone told him everything he needed to know. Is there any particular reason that you've been stealing my merchant shipping contracts? Or will you merely claim it is just business? Rosalind tried to pull her face away, but Ashton backed her into the corner of the alcove. He knew his encroaching stance was predatory, like an animal ready to attack. Her lovely eyes widened, and she tried to back away, but couldn't. He had her trapped against the wall, exactly where he wanted her.
Well, answer me.
Ashton slid his hand down her neck. His fingers shaped themselves around the column of her throat, and Rosalind felt a twinge of fear. But rather than throttle her, he caressed her. Her skin broke out into goose flesh as a sense of anticipation began to rise in her body. Rosalind knew of Ashton's reputation. He was more than capable of compromising her. But here, would he dare? They'd crossed paths once before. Last December they had engaged in a bidding war for a shipping line. She'd conceded to him only because of her curiosity regarding how he'd wounded his arm. In exchange for the truth, she had relented and let him win his bid for the shipping line. But she hadn't agreed to relinquish her other interests. Her late husband's business was important to her, her means of remaining independent. If he thought for one moment she would abandon it because he had the same interests, he was very much mistaken. "I have just as much right to go after those contracts as you do," she argued. His gaze leapt from her eyes to her lips. "If you wanted to get my attention, pet, I assure you that you have it." "I'm not your pet," Rosalind snapped. He crowded her even farther against the wall, pressing his body against hers with a low chuckle. "You will be. I've bent many a woman to my will, using her own desires against her. You will be no different." Ashton pressed his hips forward, just enough to make it clear that she could not easily wriggle out.
"It is business, nothing more."
Why did she have to sound so breathless?
"Poppycock."
He used that same dangerously rough voice against her. The usually silly word sounded strangely erotic on his lips.
"It's true."
"Liar."
"How dare you call me a liar?"
Rosalind hissed in outrage. The blackguard had the nerve to grin at her. Her Scottish temper flared, and the natural cadence of her tongue slipped.
"You bloody galoot!"
She broke free of his grasp, and smacked a bald fist against his chest. He grunted at the blow, surprised by her strength, no doubt, then glanced down at her fist on his chest. He raised his face to meet her eyes, and quirked one pale brow in challenge.
"You've not done this business to any other shipping line, only mine."
She raised her own dark brow right back.
"How would you know that?"
"It's my business to know such things."
"Been spying on me, have you?"
She hated that she couldn't keep herself from sounding like a Scot, rather than the English lady she'd fought so hard to become.
"You admit it, then."
He still had his hand on her neck, his elegant fingers stroking her skin, even as she tried to break free of his hold.
"Of course I don't. I merely wish to know how you came to such a stupid conclusion."
Ashton's hand on her throat tightened ever so slightly, a whisper of a threat.
"I met with the other line owners this afternoon. According to them, only I seem to be suffering the effects of your Scottish temper."
Rosalind blushed out of fury rather than embarrassment. She dug her fingers into the big bone wrist so close to her neck and tried to remove it. For a moment, it seemed she would succeed, and Ashton looked at her in surprise before redoubling his efforts to hold her in place.
"What did you hope to gain by your schemes?"
Ashton asked.
"I was willing to stay out of your way if you kept away from mine. But here you are, tugging at the tiger's tail, and you ask me why you are on the verge of being bitten."
"Are you threatening me, Lord Lennox?"
Rosalind demanded. Surely he would back down. Surely he would leave her be, now that he had made his displeasure known.
"Indeed I am, Lady Melbourne. And I fear you won't like my method of punishment."
"I've heard of your tricks, Lord Lennox. You won't break my company. My finances are secure. I have few debts, and all my contracts are ironclad. Your punishment would be a waste of time."
Rosalind was confident she had him there. There was nothing he could devise that would scare her in the least, until he kissed her. Hard. Rosalind tried to fight him off, but the fierce baron was made of stone for all of her struggles. It was like trying to shift a boulder, a very nice, warm, masculine boulder.
"So, the baron wants to play that game, does he?"
Rosalind would fight fire with fire. He intended to throw her off her senses and replace reason with lust. Did he think her resolve so weak? Every woman could expect such shocking behavior from a man. But had he ever considered how he might react if faced by an equally determined woman? She met him kiss for kiss, leaning in until her body was flush to his. She would not deny it was pleasurable, but she couldn't afford to think about that, not now. There was a battle afoot, and she was going to win. When he wedged his thigh between her legs and started bunching her skirts up around her hips, she bit his lower lip. Already he was raising the stakes. His fingers dug into the bared skin of her thighs as he lifted her right leg to lock around his hip. The taste of blood and brandy shared by their mouths was a catalyst for Rosalind's arousal. She'd always preferred things a bit wild, but her late husband had been far too old and sweet to ever give her what she'd craved. Not like this man who pinned her to the wall. He set fire to her very blood with his hard kisses and rough hands. But it was a tool, a weapon at his disposal, and one he was not afraid to use. Forcing a hand between their tightly pressed bodies, she clawed a path down his tailored shirt and waistcoat to cup the bulge of his arousal that jabbed her stomach. She squeezed it, expecting him to cry out. Instead, there came a throaty growl as he rubbed himself against the palm of her hand like a tame jungle cat.
"God, what you do to me!"
he moaned, before he thrust his tongue deep into her mouth. Something in the gruff way he'd spoken those words made her body burst into flames. She captured his mouth, kissing him back just as ruthlessly. The war continued. Rosalind writhed against him, trying to get closer, to ease the building ache inside her, an ache she'd thought she'd never feel again for any man. She had cared for the late Lord Melbourne, but there hadn't been love, and certainly not lust such as this. If only they had met under other circumstances. But it was time to put an end to this.
"You call this a punishment?"
she challenged, fighting her desire to smile. His panting and shaking body was all she needed to know. He was losing control of himself. The careful, controlled Baron Lennox was about to unleash that dark side he thought he hid so well. She suspected they were a pair cut from the same cloth, dark, hungry desires covered by cool, demure behavior in polite society. And she wanted to see how far she could push him, if she could break him the way he was trying to break her.
"You little minx,"
Ashton snarled, and slammed her back against the wall with such force that she momentarily couldn't breathe. Her heartbeat spiked again, and she gripped the back of his neck, hauling his head down to hers for another kiss.
"Is that the best you can do?"
she taunted him. "What makes you think you've seen my best?" Before Rosalind could react, he penetrated her lacy underpinnings with a hand and cupped her mound. She gasped in disbelief. This was an act of desperation, but one that might just undo her. Despite the rough plundering of his tongue in her mouth, the fingers between her legs were gentle. They probed her growing wetness, spreading the slick honey of her core about. Her late husband had never touched her like this. He'd taken her body calmly, careful not to hurt her, but he had never truly pleasured her either. Ashton's touch was such sweet agony by comparison. His sensual play bathed her in fire. The ache was intense, painful even. This man was her competitor. He was ruthless and a notorious rake. Yet at that moment, all Rosalind felt was the pleasure of being desired, seduced, and kissed with wild abandon. She'd never been an object of desire before, and this moment strengthened the last remnants of her feminine confidence. Ashton did not know how to respond to Rosalind's eager reciprocation. Giving in, succumbing, even fainting he was accustomed to. But Rosalind had instead fought back with equal ferocity, matching him play for play. In the end, he'd struck where he knew she would be most vulnerable, and it seemed to be paying off. He slid a finger into Rosalind's sheath, groaning with strained pleasure at the suction and warmth. Her inner walls latched onto his finger, and Ashton could barely control himself. The mere thought of himself inside her, rather than his finger, had him gasping for breath.
"Your body wants me, Rosalind. Wants me buried in you to the hilt. Feel that?"
He inserted a second finger inside her. Rosalind whimpered, her head falling back, and her hands clenching and unclenching on his shoulders, like a cat kneading with its paws.
"Oh, it does, my lord. But do you think yours doesn't want me as well?"
Her hand grabbed his arousal, making it even tighter against his breeches. Her hand moved, and his eyes nearly rolled back in his head, with a mix of pain and pleasure. Where had she learned to? Before he had time to realize what was happening, the little woman had gripped his shoulders and slammed him against the wall. Her mouth was on his. that sweet taste exploding on his tongue again. I should push her away. I'm too close to... Oh, to hell with it. I want to be bad again.
Ashton curled his arms around her body, using the wall behind him as support. With each rub of her hand, he felt his body respond. That tightness in his breeches almost unbearable.
Wouldn't you like to pin me down in bed, Lord Lennox? See my hair flared against the pillow? Tame that Scots temper of mine,
she murmured. A bolt of hot arousal shot straight to his cock as she licked the shell of his ear. He groaned helplessly, the image she'd painted too damned perfect to ignore. Then she moaned and gasped as though he were bedding her, again and again. Another moment of this and he'd...
Rosalind!
He hissed her name as his body went rigid and pleasure exploded through him. His shaft jerked beneath him and he sagged back against the wall. He looked down at his breeches.
Oh, no.
The little Scottish hellion stepped back. At first he thought it might be in shock or regret, but no. Instead she smiled at her work and gave a husky laugh.
Well now, at least my skirts cover my minor disgrace. I wish you the best of luck in dealing with yours, my lord.
With a taunting smile, she pulled off one of her black gloves and dropped it between them on the ground, disposing of the garment that had touched his member. Or was it perhaps some sort of challenge? Still smirking, she smoothed her skirts and left the alcove. Stuck alone in the alcove to fight off his irritation, Ashton could only glare at Lady Melbourne as she disappeared into the heavy crowds, preparing for the opera's second act. How the hell had a woman gotten the upper hand against him? There was no way he could step outside in this condition. He'd have to wait until the opera had ended and the crowds had dispersed. Ashton slapped an open hand against the wall behind him and breathed in deeply. Then he glanced down at the glove. With a vengeful delight, he retrieved it off the floor, tucking it securely into his coat pocket. He would find a way to return it to her when the circumstances ruled in his favor, once he finished this little game. Little minx, I'll get you for this.
Chapter 11. The small white card propped against the vanity mirror spelled out Anne's fate in delicate script. You are cordially invited to Chesley Manor for a wedding breakfast to celebrate the marriage of Lady Anne Isabel Chesley to Lord Cedric Alexander Sheridan.
Am I truly doing this?
She asked aloud. Emily stood behind Anne, her beautiful figure highlighted in a pale blue silk bridesmaid's gown.
Anne, you are wearing a wedding dress, waiting for a carriage to take you to St. George's. Either this is some elaborate prank you've dreamed up to shock all of London, or you are doing this.
Anne fidgeted, her hands running over her silver silk gown, trimmed with Honiton lace on the bodice, sleeves and hem. The door to Anne's bedchamber opened, and Horatia peeked inside. Both she and Emily were wearing lovely matching gowns, with small tulle veils.
Emily, our carriage is here. Cedric and the men have departed for the church. It is our turn.
Horatia flashed a radiant smile in Anne's direction.
So soon? All right. I'm ready.
Emily's hand settled the wreath of roses and orange flowers over Anne's thin veil and secured it with a few hairpins. Once satisfied, she kissed Anne's cheek and left the room. Horatia lingered, however.
I just wanted to say thank you, Anne. What for?
Cedric's sister clasped her hands together in front of her, eyes bright with unshed tears.
My brother is the best of men. He has had to raise two sisters, mourn the loss of our parents, and now his sight. The world has taken so much from him, and I fear he has so much left to lose. But with you by his side, he won't face the world alone. I am not sure you can understand my point of view, as you have no siblings. When I married Lucien and Audrey was sent away to Europe, I feared for him. He was so terribly alone. But he isn't any more.
Anne wished her eyes weren't burning.
it felt foolish to want to cry. I may not know what it is to love a sibling, or suffer when they suffer, but solitude is something I do understand. Today I will pledge myself to your brother, so that neither of us shall be alone ever again. We shall survive together.
Anne had barely finished speaking before Horatia clasped her in a fierce embrace.
Thank you, sister.
Horatia wiped a tear from her cheek and kissed Anne before she left the bedchamber. Anne took a deep breath, but a knock at the door startled her. She gathered her skirts and opened the door to find the Duke of Essex waiting there.
Pardon me, madam. I thought perhaps I could escort you to the church. Cedric told me that you have no male family members to give you away. At this point, Godric flushed, but he bravely continued. It would be my honour to do so, if you wish. It was a bashful, bumbling, uncertain side of the man that Anne had never seen before. No wonder Emily was hopelessly in love with him. Beneath that stern countenance, he was a man of deep emotions.
You would do this for me?
You are a part of Cedric's world now, and therefore a part of mine. I want nothing more than to see you properly given away to my friend. Besides, no one should ride to their wedding alone.
Godric extended his arm to her. Anne linked her hand through his arm and let him escort her to the carriage. Anne had expected her journey to St. George's to be a lonely one, but the charming Duke sitting across from her made the trip entertaining and far less worrisome. They arrived at the church in no time at all. Godric got down first and offered her his hand. She lifted her skirts out of the way and stepped down. Ahead of her the doors opened, and inside she saw hundreds of curious onlookers, as well as members of the families of Cedric's closest friends. There didn't seem to be an empty seat available. Fear sliced through Anne, and she froze, unable to take another step. Godric turned her toward him.
"Anne, listen to me. Look straight to the front of the church. Find him. He's waiting for you."
Godric turned her back to the cavernous opening, and there he was. Cedric shifted restlessly, as though feeling her eyes on him.
"Look at him, only at him. It is just you and Cedric today. No one else is in that church. Walk to him and him alone."
Godric squeezed her hand, and she found she was walking with him down the aisle. Her feet moved of their own accord, bringing her closer and closer to her destiny.
"Look only at him."
She did exactly that. Ashton stood at Cedric's side and leaned over to whisper in Cedric's ear. Whatever Ashton said seemed to banish the shadows on Cedric's face, replaced by a grin layered with relief. Anne felt her lips curving to mirror his.
"We can do this,"
she encouraged herself silently. The closer she moved, the more she admired the man she was about to marry. He stood tall and proud in a dark blue frock coat. The white waistcoat snugly fit his athletic frame, as did his light ivory trousers. Even his cravat was perfectly set. It was simple and light, not the awkward multiple ruffled creations most men wore. It was just like him. No illusions, no games. He dressed the way the world should see him, a man with strength and will. He was no daintily clad aristocrat. He was simply Cedric. He was everything she'd ever dreamed of in her heart since she was a young girl. Anne would later marvel that she didn't recall the music, or even the face of the clergyman who joined them together. All that her mind and heart had focused on was the feel of Cedric's warm hand joining hers as they exchanged vows and wedding bands. There was something powerful, something wondrous about the knowledge that what they'd done today no man could tear asunder. After being proclaimed man and wife, Cedric brushed a chaste but lingering kiss on her cheek, and the tenderness of it made Anne light-headed.
"Shall we go, lady wife?"
Cedric's face was mockingly serious. Anne laughed as he broke into a teasing chuckle.
"Lead on, fearless husband," she replied, and took his arm.
They walked past the endless aisles of well-wishers and gawkers to the wedding carriage outside. Orchids and roses had been threaded onto delicate netting on its sides, and the glossy-coated bays snorted and stamped impatiently. Cedric caught Anne's hand to help her as she climbed into the carriage. She turned to him, taking his arm to aid him. For once he did not recoil from the offer. He was barely seated before Charles and Lucien shouted a cheer, and the crowd pelted them with rice. Cedric laughed and tucked Anne into his side, shielding her from the raining pellets. Cedric then pulled out a blue velvet coin pouch and tossed its contents into the air. Children scrambled forward to collect the shiny treasures as they rolled and clinked against the stone steps of the church.
"Let's be off,"
Cedric hollered to the carriage driver. The horses lurched into motion, and Cedric settled back into the seat and kept one arm about Anne's waist.
"I'm simply famished. How about you?" he asked.
"Oh, yes, it's funny. I couldn't stomach a thing this morning, but now I'm starving,"
Anne admitted.
"I had a similar attack of panic myself. Got halfway through a scone before I realized I wouldn't be able to eat another bite. I am so relieved this is all over."
He paused speculatively.
"I doubt that was the most romantic thing to say, was it?"
Anne laid her head against his shoulder.
"I agree, it wasn't. But I shall confess I share the sentiment. When Godric and I arrived at the church doors, I almost ran away. Can you imagine? The sight of all those people staring at me."
"However did you make it down the aisle?"
Cedric's soft tone did not conceal his concern.
"I saw you waiting for me. After that, nothing else mattered."
Anne inwardly chided herself for saying something so foolish and sentimental. It made her look like a pathetic romantic. She shut her eyes, wishing she could take the words back. When she opened her eyes, Cedric's face was an inch from hers. He surrounded her face with his white-gloved hands and leaned his forehead against hers.
"I love that about you."
"Love what?"
Anne's gaze fell to his sensual lips, so close to hers.
"That deep down you aren't cold. You're an inferno, a blaze that consumes me."
"I'm not her,"
she began, but Cedric possessed her mouth in a slow, tantalizing kiss, one to erase all those that came before it. She felt fresh and new, the blushing bride she ought to have been years ago. When their lips finally parted, she couldn't remember a thing about their conversation.
"What were we talking about?"
Cedric brushed his lips back and forth over hers in a feathery caress.
"I'll be damned if I can remember."
His remark left them both laughing. The carriage stopped at Chesley Manor, where the wedding breakfast was to be held. In the brief span of time she'd been gone, the servants had turned the manor into a living garden.
"I smell flowers. Lots of them,"
Cedric observed, his head turning like a hound catching a familiar scent.
"My housekeeper has outdone herself."
Anne and Cedric entered the morning room to find the food all laid out. Exquisite silver trays laden with viands and lobster salad were among the delicacies. In the centre of the large table, a lavishly decorated cake was waiting to be devoured.
"Are we alone, Anne?"
Cedric asked. The guests were still en route from the church, and the servants had scattered at the sight of the newlywed couple entering the morning room.
"We are."
"Excellent. Leave me to the cake."
He peeled off his white gloves and pocketed them. Anne did as he asked, curious to see what he wanted.
"Now dip a finger into the icing."
"What?"
"Please."
Despite the blankness of his eyes, heat simmered in his expression.
"Fine, although I don't know what you'd want me to ruin our cake for."
Anne dipped her finger into a discreet place near the base of the cake, where she hoped no one would notice. A dollop of white icing coated her finger. Before she could stop him, Cedric captured her hand and took her finger into his mouth,
sucking on it. She felt the heated glide of his tongue. A moan escaped her lips.
"Shall I do that again?" he offered in a husky tone.
"No,"
she said, regretting it the instant his face fell. He couldn't see her, couldn't know that she meant to return the favor. She took his hand and carefully ran his own index finger along the same path she'd put her own, and covered it with frosting. His body went rigid as she brought his hand to her mouth. Anne licked the icing from his finger, relishing the taste of sugar on his skin. The combination was nothing short of sinful. She could get used to such a decadent taste. And from the look on Cedric's face, she sensed he wanted to do more than lick her back.
"Like I said, lady wife, inferno."
Charles muttered to himself as he examined two suspicious grooves in the frosting on his slice of wedding cake.
"I say, I believe someone had a taste of this before I did. Just eat it,"
Cedric said gruffly, as he used a spoon on his own slice. Dear sweet Anne had brought him a spoon, remembering his aversion to sharper utensils.
"Righto, old boy."
Charles dug into the rich cake and had a bite before speaking again.
"I didn't believe you actually meant to go through with this, you know. But somewhere between the ring exchange and the vows, it occurred to me that you genuinely care for your wife." "Of course I care for her. I mean, you truly care.
I think you may be in danger of falling in love with her."
Falling in love was uttered with all the excitement of a doctor discovering an outbreak of plague. Cedric found Charles's shoulder and jostled it in a brotherly fashion.
"Well, don't become joyous on my account."
All around them, the Chesley morning room was filled with guests eating and chattering. Cedric had done his obligatory duty of greeting guests and enduring the numerous toasts to everyone's health before he could finally escape. He'd hunkered down in the corner, out of the way, where Charles had joined him. Charles changed the subject.
"Have you and Anne given any thought to what you plan to do with the manor?"
"I haven't yet reached a decision. It's a lovely place, but I wonder if Anne will want to keep it after losing her father."
"Why do you ask?"
"Well, I escorted Jonathan to Drummond's Bank yesterday, and he was set on securing a loan to buy a townhouse of his own. I believe he means to set himself up and start a life. I imagine he's grown tired of being shuffled between Godric and Ashton's homes."
"You think he means to start settling down? At his age?"
Cedric hadn't really thought it possible. He and his friends had only just started to want to settle down themselves. Jonathan was almost a decade their junior.
"Perhaps he's taken a serious interest in your offer of Audrey. If he obtains the loan by next week, he can begin preparing a lovely little nest for a bride."
The comment would have sent him into a protective rage a few months ago. But now Cedric seriously considered it.
"Do you think so?
I should talk about it with Anne tonight."
"Aren't you more interested in activities that don't involve talking?"
"Careful, Charles,"
Cedric warned, but his tone was teasing.
"Do you think you will suit each other then?"
"With time, yes. But I believe I will have to introduce her to passion slowly. She's likely to be overwhelmed by it. Being untouched, she will have pain and discomfort the first time. God, I wish that pain on myself 1,000 times over if it would spare her."
"You've become soft-hearted, Cedric."
There was love in Charles's chastisement that only the deepest of friendships could produce.
"If I have, let me never harden my heart again."
"Cheers to that,"
Charles commended before he sobered.
"Oh, you'd best rescue your wife. Lady Dalrymple and her sister seem to be talking her into oblivion."
"What? Lead me over, will you?"
Cedric latched onto Charles's arm as the pair threaded their way through the guests. Cedric knew when they'd reached their destination, because Lady Dalrymple's shrill voice threatened to shatter his eardrums.
"You, Lord Sheridan, have done a very reckless thing. I was just telling your wife."
"I beg your pardon?"
Cedric cut into her screeching.
"Marriage within a week of Lord Chesley's death. It is unheard of."
"Unheard of,"
Lady Dalrymple's sister chimed in.
"I am most sorry you feel that way, Lady Dalrymple.
I admit I have a fondness for setting new trends in society, Cedric replied, pasting a charming smile on his face. No doubt by next season it will be all the rage within the ton.
Such impudence!
Lady Dalrymple turned her attentions back to Anne.
Have you no shame, Lady Sheridan? You have spit upon the ethics of genteel society, and I will not stand for it. Know this, I shall take it upon myself to single-handedly turn you out of polite society altogether.
Cedric heard Anne's breath hitch. His own fury rose in a violent tempest. Grasping the thin threads of control, he resumed his polite demeanour.
That is not the least bit distressing to me, Cedric said with a smirk. In fact, I would consider it a favour if your influence could achieve such a Herculean task. My wife and I have much more entertaining things to do with ourselves than attend balls and galas. Now, I believe I should escort you from our home. It would not do to have your reputation sullied by your presence here.
Cedric released his hold on Charles, and with luck he found the feeble form of Lady Dalrymple's arm.
Come, madam, I'll see you to the door, he said loudly.
As he started to drag the stuttering matron along, he prayed he would not run into anything. As for the lady, Lady Dalrymple suddenly squawked in pain.
Oh, so sorry. Always thought this door was too narrow.
Cedric's mocking apology earned a snicker from Charles.
Why, you oomph!
Lady Dalrymple's reply was cut short when Cedric's boot caused her to stumble. His free hand found the door latch, and he swung the door open.
Ah, here's the door. Have a lovely day, madam, and please do not come again. Ta!
Cedric practically shoved her through the doorway as her sister ran after her.
You cannot live without the benefits of society, Lord Sheridan,
Lady Dalrymple shouted.
Actually, we can, and we'll do so most happily. Now, if you'll excuse me, I wish to go and ravish my wife.
Cedric slammed the door and sighed, leaning against the stout oak for support. Then he caught the scent of wild orchids teasing the air.
Anne?
The sound of satin skirts glided over the floor in his direction. Before he could say a word, his body was enveloped by hers. She buried her face in the crook of his neck and wrapped her arms about him.
Are you terribly upset with me?
Anne asked. Cedric was genuinely puzzled.
Why on earth would I be upset?
I came to you with this early marriage scheme, and now you've made powerful enemies.
Powerful enemies? Darling, please. Lady Dalrymple is but an irritating gnat. She buzzes and annoys, but is entirely harmless. I'm not even sure how she got an invitation. However, if you believe you feel indebted to me in some fashion, I would be delighted to give you a few ideas how to make it up to me.
Why do I suspect that this will involve a ravishing of my person?
Anne laughed. Cedric revelled in the delight of feeling her body shake with laughter. He settled his hands on her hips, holding her against him as he pressed his lips against her forehead.
I would beg a kiss, lady wife.
Just one?
A long one, preferably, he clarified.
Very well.
Anne's hand slid up his back, tracing his muscles and the slopes of his shoulder blades as she rose up on tiptoe to kiss him. As their lips met, Cedric closed his eyes, sinking deeper into that grey he could never escape. But when he held Anne, when he kissed her like this, he could almost feel his sight return. A tingling seemed to spread through him, and for a brief second he thought he saw stars. Anne deepened the kiss, and he readily surrendered all that he was to her gentle sweetness. As much as he loved dominating her senses, he loved it more when she did more than simply react to him. When she acted as though she wanted him just as much as he wanted her. Their lips parted with a soft pop, and Anne sighed dreamily.
Do we have to return to the breakfast?
Cedric murmured in the hollow of her throat as he trailed kisses along her skin. He delighted in how her body responded.
We must.
It would be quite inappropriate, even for us, if we disappeared from our own wedding breakfast, especially after throwing out a guest, Nat or no.
Cedric groaned in defeat, and reluctantly let Anne pull out of his arms. The loss of her warmth felt like a gaping hole in his chest.
Very well.
Cedric took Anne's arm, and they returned to the morning room.
The last of the guests finally left some time after 4 in the afternoon.
Anne and Cedric collapsed in exhaustion in the parlour. Anne's head itched terribly from the veil and wreath, and at last she allowed herself to take it off. As she plucked pins out of her coiffure, she watched Cedric settle back against the couch next to her.
I say, we did a bang-up job, my heart. What do you think?
Excluding the unpleasantness of Lady Dalrymple, I would certainly agree.
She eased the wreath from her hair and set it down on the floor. Next came the veil, and Anne let the lace float to the floor before she sighed with relief. Its weight no longer burdened her head, and the beginnings of a nasty headache faded before they could take root.
Everything all right?
Cedric asked.
Yes, I finally got rid of that veil and wreath.
Come here, Cedric said.
Why?
Anne was too tired to fight him off if he decided to finally ravish her.
Please, come here.
He opened his arms, and the gesture struck her as sweet. It made her feel needed, and not just in the ways of the flesh. She hesitated for only a moment. The second she was close enough, Cedric gripped her waist and pulled her onto his lap. He adjusted his body so he lounged back along the length of the couch. He pulled Anne's body to lie on top of his, her back to his chest. Anne rested her hands on his thighs and moved softly as his hands settled on her shoulders, rubbing the tension out and kneading the stressful spots away.
Let your head fall back.
Anne obeyed willingly, her head finding a perfect place on his shoulder to rest.
That feels like heaven.
Anne felt like a purring cat, content to let her master stroke and massage her forever.
Who knew my wife would be so easily seduced?
Cedric chuckled, his warm breath fanning her right ear in a pleasant sort of way. Anne's eyelids felt heavy.
Today was lovely, wasn't it?
She fought to stay awake, but she failed.
I'm just relieved it was not a disaster, he said.
She slipped into sleep, letting his touch envelop her with warmth. Once Anne went limp in his arms, Cedric knew she was completely at his mercy. Rather than take advantage of this, as the old Cedric would have, he felt compelled to protect her instead. Cedric continued his gentle ministrations until Anne's breathing deepened into the slow, soft pattern of sleep. He wanted to stay there, with her body wrapped in his, but their position wasn't ideal for his comfort if he wished to rest as well.
Time for bed, he whispered.
Not that his bride could hear him. He eased her off him and then got up to open the parlour door. He summoned a maid to turn down her bed and retrieve Anne's nightgown from her packed trunk. There was no way that he would be taking her to his townhouse on Curzon Street tonight. Cedric had spent a lot of time in the last few days acquainting himself with the layout of Chesley Manor. It proved to be useful now as he scooped Anne up into his arms and began a careful journey down the hall to her room. With some assistance from the maid and a couple of softly spoken warnings, he set Anne down on the freshly washed sheets.
Shall I undress her?
The maid offered.
Yes, thank you. I dare say I would do it myself, but I don't wish to wake her by trying.
Cedric took a chair by the empty fireplace and listened to the rustle of fabric as the maid prepared Anne for sleep.
She's ready, my lord,
the maid whispered, and quietly saw herself out. Cedric found his way back to the bed and took off his boots, frock coat, and waistcoat. When he got down to just his trousers, he felt good enough to relax, but not enough to shock Anne if she woke to find herself under the covers with him.
Small steps,
he reminded himself. He slid Anne under the counterpane of the bed, pausing as she stirred and muttered something unintelligible. Rest now. He stroked her hair back from her face and then got into bed with her, tucking her body into his. She nestled deeply into his arms and sighed like a tired babe. The feel of her against him was wonderful, heavenly. In all of his years of chasing and bedding women, he'd finally caught the one he never wanted to let go. Anne woke early in the morning, the dawn's pale light only a drab grey presence behind the curtains. Although the bed was empty, she had the strangest notion that it hadn't been a short while ago. Blinking and delicately yawning, she stretched her limbs and got up. She then realized she was still in her own home, her bedchamber at Chesley Manor. She had never made it to Cedric's townhouse last night, after the long celebration. What had happened? Surely the man hadn't wanted to be deprived of his wedding night. Anne vaguely recalled easing into Cedric's lap in the parlour and getting drowsy beneath his gentle touch. After that, her memory faded. Where was her husband now? Husband. It was such an odd word, and it had forced its way into her daily vocabulary now.
Madam?
A young upstairs maid poked her head inside Anne's bedchamber.
Come in, Nelly.
The maid bore a tray of tea and scones that smelled delicious. Anne's stomach rumbled in agreement.
His lordship thought you might be hungry.
I am.
Her stomach made another impatient noise as Nelly set the tray down on the bed.
Nelly, is my husband still here? He just left 10 minutes ago. He instructed me to tell you that he has made preparations for a departure to Brighton in a few hours. I've already packed all of your best clothes. His lordship said anything else you need can be bought in Brighton later.
Anne took a sip of tea and tried to remain calm. They were leaving so soon. The thought of leaving her life here behind, even just for a month-long honeymoon, was frightening. It would be just her and Cedric at his estate. It wasn't that she didn't want this private time with him, but she was afraid they still knew so little about each other. Above all things, Anne loathed awkward silences.
"You've already packed everything?"
Anne asked Nelly, though she already knew the answer.
"Yes, madam. Oh, I plumb forgot. His lordship left this for you."
Nelly handed Anne a small blue velvet box. Anne took it and opened it with a small amount of trepidation. Inside was a beautiful garnet stone, surrounded by a ring of tiny diamonds. There was no chain, only a heavy satin ribbon with a metal clasp at the back.
"What's this?"
Anne asked Nelly.
"He told me to tell you that he thought you would like to wear it when you choose to remove the ring he gave you. He knows you love to ride, and a ring would snag on your gloves. He feared if that happened, you might be tempted to remove it often, and it might get lost. Do you wish me to help you put it on?"
"Oh, yes, please do."
Anne marvelled at the striking burgundy of the garnet and the subtle shimmer of the elegant diamonds. She had never been one for expensive jewels, but this simple yet sizable piece seemed made just for her. How could he know she would love it? Treasure it as she had never done for other jewels, save the ring he'd given her that had belonged to his mother. Nelly sighed dreamily.
"His lordship has fine taste." "He does, doesn't he? I only wish I knew what gift I could give him."
She knew a box of fine cigars or engraved snuff boxes would not have the same effect. She wanted to get him something wonderful, something he would never wish to be without. But what gift could measure up to that impossible standard? Anne spent the remainder of the morning seeing to the household and the servants before she left for Brighton. The housekeeper had things well in hand, and Anne knew she could rest easy during their time away. Anne was tidying up her study when she heard the clatter of hooves and wheels outside. She scampered down the stairs like a puppy, surprised to find herself eager to see Cedric. They almost collided in the entryway.
"Darling, there you are."
Cedric grunted, as he held on to her to keep her from pitching them both to the ground. With an arm twined about her waist, he bent his head down carefully to place a tender kiss on her forehead. The gesture was sweet, domestic, entirely unlike Cedric's usual kisses, but no less endearing. She had never known there could be more than one type of kiss, and now she had wanted them all, several hundred of each and every kind. Cedric grinned.
You were in a hurry.
I was running and heard the horses. I wanted to see you.
She never got to finish. Cedric's lips claimed hers in a silencing possession. There was amusement in this kiss, yet there was a slow-burning fire that built behind that teasing, like a second glass of scotch with its rich warmth.
I'm sorry I ran into you,
she mumbled between kisses. Never apologize for having childlike exuberance. I find it charming. I didn't want to marry a graceful swan-like creature. I wanted a woman who would go bounding in meadows and walking through forest trails with me.
You make me sound like a faithful hound,
Anne mused sarcastically. Nonsense. I make the dogs sleep out in the stables. You, however, belong with me, always. What say you to that? Cedric pinched at her bottom, and Anne punched his chest with a bold fist.
You're incorrigible.
I'm a rogue, my heart. You'd best get used to it. Anne allowed Cedric to usher her outside and into the waiting coach. She bid farewell to the manor, and to the only home she'd ever known. Ahead of her lay unknown horizons.
Damn that fool Englishman! I'll handle this in the manner I wish.
Samir al-Zarani had followed the Sheridan coach at a distance down the well-travelled road to Brighton. But as the couple's coach had taken the lesser populated country roads toward the estate, Samir had been forced to drop back out of sight, lest Sheridan's driver realize they were being trailed. Using the road's natural underbrush as cover, he was able to guide his horse through the forest at the edge of the trail and avoid being observed. When at last the carriage turned onto the drive that led to the massive country house of Rushton Steading, Samir flicked his reins against the beast's neck, steering him farther into the forest. The Englishman, Sir Hugo Waverley, yes, Samir had done his own research and discovered who the man was, or at least rumoured to be. He had advised him to wait for the perfect moment, and then snatch Sheridan and his bride from the house, and take them to the port. But Samir had no intention of following Waverley's instructions. If he took Sheridan and his wife ahead of schedule, he could have his ship leave port early. His men were back in town, waiting for instructions. It would have been too conspicuous to bring them along while he was still learning his enemy's lands, and discerning how protected Sheridan was from attack. Glancing up at the skies, Samir frowned. Thick storm clouds were building on the horizon, and a cold wind was starting to gather strength.
English weather,
he sneered. Icy, wet, and suffocating. It would be a relief to get what he came for and depart for home.
I shall suffer this weather tonight, but not for much longer.
He dismounted from his horse and started walking it through the woods, slowing as he approached the distant house. He'd likely have to bide his time, but he would do what was necessary to retrieve his horses from the Sheridan stables and, more importantly, exact his revenge. Chapter 12. Anne had developed a painful habit of hand-wringing by the time she and Cedric arrived at the Sheridan estate on the outskirts of Brighton. Rushton Steading, the vast ancestral home of the Sheridan family, was intimidating. The estate was mainly wooded areas where dark copses of trees hunkered down at the road's edge like silent sentinels. Anne drew in a shocked breath as their travelling coach rounded the nearest outcropping of forest, and her new world opened up before her. The house itself was a grand mansion made of white stone, a bright beacon amidst the heavy emerald backdrop.
Do you like it?
Cedric's voice was soft against her neck as he breathed in her scent. Anne couldn't help but admire the multi-windowed edifice.
I've never seen anything so beautiful. I can see why you favored hunting and riding, Cedric. This land is built for such activities.
My father and I spent many hours in those woods with rifles and hounds. Cedric's voice was rough as emotion rippled through his words. Anne frowned at her own callousness. To bring up his past had to be painful, both to be reminded of his lost loved ones and lost sight.
"What's the matter, Anne? You've grown tense," Cedric observed.
Only then did Anne realize he'd moved up behind her and wrapped her in his arms. He was constantly offering her comfort, and all she had ever offered him was cool indifference. Anne took a deep breath before she spoke.
"I'm sorry for pushing you away," she confessed.
Cedric's hands, which had been stroking her waist, stilled at her words.
"You need never apologize to me about protecting yourself."
Cedric dipped his head to nuzzle her neck.
"Are you angry that we did not share a bed last night?"
Anne asked, gazing at his full lips. "Don't be silly, my heart. Besides, I did share your bed, even if we only slept and nothing more."
"You were there. I thought perhaps I dreamt that you'd stayed."
"You shall expect me tonight, then." Cedric's hand slid along her ribs, tightening possessively. Anne shook with anticipation, her breath quickening. Tonight she would give herself to him, let him unleash her inner desires. She'd waited so long for this, for someone to trust. She only prayed he wouldn't be furious when he discovered she wasn't untouched. More than ever she regretted that one night with Crispin. Not that she'd been given a choice. The coach pulled up to the steps of the mansion, and a footman rushed out to meet them.
"Welcome, my lord, my lady."
The young footman offered a hand to Anne, and she stepped down. Anne was careful to give Cedric time and room to get out on his own. But she and the footman stood ready to catch him.
"Is that you, Hartley?"
Cedric asked as he emerged from the coach.
"It is, my lord,"
Hartley replied with a slight Irish lilt, grinning as his master clapped him on the shoulder.
"How is the household?"
Cedric slid Anne's arm through his and started up the steps, his cane tapping the stones.
"Mr. Baldwin is happy to have you home, of course. Mrs. Pickwick, however, has been tearing through the house in a panic, concerned that Lady Sheridan won't be pleased with the state of the house."
"Me?"
Anne gasped.
"Don't worry, my heart. The head housekeeper tends to have these episodes of panic regardless of circumstance. You'll find my butler, Mr. Bodwin, much more to your liking. He's a calm soul compared to our esteemed Mrs. Pickwick."
Anne felt suddenly shy as Cedric ushered her into her new home. The hall was full of servants, all lined up and ready to meet her. Anne could barely keep all of their names straight. But Mr. Bodwin and Mrs. Pickwick stood out as the more elderly and experienced of them.
"My lord, would you prefer to dine in your chambers or in the dining hall?"
Mrs. Pickwick asked.
"My chambers, please. See that you provide for two. My wife will be joining me."
"Of course, my lord."
Mrs. Pickwick seemed greatly relieved at the announcement of their intent to dine upstairs.
"Here are some letters arrived from London, with the afternoon's post."
She held out a packet of letters and set them in Cedric's outstretched hand.
"Come, let me take you upstairs, Anne. I can offer you a tour of the place tomorrow. Tonight we shall eat, rest, and settle in."
The grin on Cedric's face was more one of boyish charm than devilish. Anne laughed in response.
"You weren't joking when you spoke of appetites."
"I never joke about the desires of my body."
Anne took Cedric's offered arm and led him lead her up the grand staircase to an ornately decorated bedchamber. Blue silks and cream walls gave the room a soft, sensual appeal. The colours and feel of the room surprised Anne. She had expected burgundy reds and dark wood, something that matched the passion she'd tasted in his arms.
"Have a seat, love."
Cedric sat her down in a tall armchair near the fireplace, and it became obvious to Anne how comfortable he was here.
"Oh, I need a minute to freshen up."
"Ah, of course,"
Cedric gestured. "That way, my heart."
Anne's steps retreated, and Cedric smacked the stack of letters in his palm, far too many for him to want to bother with. After all, tonight was his real wedding night. Wedding night, he chuckled. I'm a lucky devil. He and Anne would finally have a chance to explore all of her hidden passions. My lord, will you be needing anything? Thomas Pennyworth, another footman, asked from near the doorway. Thomas, why not read me a few of these while I wait for my wife? My wife, he smiled. What a wonderful word that was now to say. Thomas took the stack of letters from Cedric, and there was a soft rustling of papers. The first is from a Mr. Crispin Andrews. The name hit Cedric like a blow. He was about to tell Thomas to burn the letter, but Thomas began speaking. My dearest Anne, it was such a pleasure seeing you again at the theatre. Write to me soon. We've much to plan now that you've settled yourself in such a comfortable position. I believe congratulations may be in order for both of us. Crispin. Cedric's heart froze. The letter hadn't been meant for him at all. He found it difficult to breathe because the tone suggested something. Surely it couldn't have meant. Dearest Anne, we've much to plan. What the devil did Andrews mean by that? Thomas, Cedric cut in. That will be all. Please hand me the letters. Thomas walked over and placed the letters in his outstretched hand, then retreated to the doorway.